Hi, friends. It's Abby Feeder, certified life and fertility coach, and you're listening to The Fertility Chick. This show is all about the path to parenthood, which is never the same for everyone, and our guests' professional success along the way. Today, we're joined by Emily Patel, who's the founder of the Hopeful Mama Foundation. She herself is a donor egg recipient, has two beautiful daughters, thanks to an egg donor. A very interesting story as to why she used an egg donor, not one that we normally hear, which I love. And Hopeful Mama, her foundation, is a nonprofit committed to supporting women facing infertility. They provide financial grants, educational workshops, and fertility support groups, much of which is in person, which is so rare these days. She has so much to offer. She was diagnosed with menopause at 25. It should have been diagnosed even sooner. So I cannot wait for you to hear what she has to say. Here's Emily. Hi, Emily.
Hi.
We finally did it. We made it happen.
We did it.
Here I'm so happy. It's so nice to see you. You know, actually, I was thinking about how we connected and you found me first, which I'm so grateful that you did. And you found my affirmation cards. I don't know who you found first, the cards or me, but you had asked me to donate some to the Hopeful Mama Foundation, which of course I did. So I would love to start there. Like, why did you need those cards that day?
Sure, of course. Yes. I actually found your cards first through a fellow infertility warrior. She had found your cards on her journey. And she actually wrote a blog post for the foundation talking about utilizing your affirmation cards. And I thought to myself, oh my gosh, I need to reach out to them and find out more about these cards and for the workshop that you donated for. So yes, Hopeful Mama Foundation is a 501c3 nonprofit that supports women on their infertility journey. And so with that, we offer different ways to support women. And when I reached out to you, it was about a mental health workshop that we were offering for free that the attendees, when they came, would get to talk with a psychologist that deals with infertility and talk just through kind of like an open book of like their feelings and how to process emotions while on infertility. And so your affirmation cards came to mind because I thought, gosh, this would be an amazing gift to send home with them after coming and talking through these intense emotions and then be able to have an affirmation deck of cards that would help encourage them along the way. So it was such a good pairing and they absolutely love them.
Makes me so happy.
Thank you again for joining those.
It's exactly the reason they were created. So that event was in person, right? And I think are most of your events in person for Hopeful Mama Foundation?
Yes, almost every event or support group or workshop is in person, but we do have virtual options as well.
Oh, you do? Okay. Because you're in Iowa.
We are in Iowa.
Yeah. I just think it's incredible. Like I'm in Los Angeles and hardly anything is in person. Because you know, so I'm just curious, like what the dynamic is, if the in-person is really important to you, does it lend a different kind of vibe? How does it shake out for the patients, the people suffering?
Yeah. You know, the in-person options that we have between support groups and workshops, I find it so valuable. And I think the women that have come, and we've actually even had some partners and husbands come that are men that have also found it super valuable because yes, even in virtual, right? Like you and I get to talk and we can see each other, but sometimes that physical connection where you're in the same room with someone and you can just truly feel the empathy that is like coming out from their stories. And it's just like a different vibe. It really is. It gives you this really sort of community that I think as much as I love virtual and the options we offer virtually, it's just more intimate because you're one-on-one, you have the opportunity to speak with either each other or the workshop speaker. And that just gives a really different sense of like intimacy and connection that I think is lost sometimes virtually. Mm-hmm. So when you have the opportunity to do in person, I think it's a really great option.
Amazing. So how did Hopeful Mama Foundation come to be?
Yeah. So Hopeful Mama came through my own personal journey with infertility. I was diagnosed with early menopause when I was 25, but learned that I had actually gone into menopause when I was 16 and I was just misdiagnosed for 9 years. And so through my journey of learning about egg donation and meeting my husband and then us going down the donor egg IVF route, I now have two girls through egg donation IVF. And so when I was holding our oldest, she was about 6 weeks old and I was holding her and I thought, God, I'm looking at her and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I can't believe that there's women in my same situation that aren't going to maybe be able to experience this. And it was so overwhelming because I thought they may have the lack of education like I did for so many years, or lack of resources or support or finances, and they won't get to experience this. And so at that moment, I didn't realize that that was the start of Hopeful Mama, but that was the seed that was planted in my heart that was like, I need to give back. I need to do something to support women like myself. So then fast forward, we're at the end of our journey for parenting. We have a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old. And I knew that this was the time that I could bring Hopeful Mama to life. And so we launched last year in April. So we're not even a year old yet.
She's amazing.
Yes, honestly, it has exceeded my expectations of what our first year could do. It has been insane. So that's kind of how Hopeful Mama started.
So let's dissect all of this. At 16, what did you get diagnosed with?
I got diagnosed with being a teenager.
They were just like, this is your normal period. So can I ask, like, how old were you when you first got your period?
I was 14.
Okay. So 2 years, what were your symptoms? What was happening to you?
Yeah, I was having hot flashes during the night. I was having night sweats. I started having headaches. I was dry everywhere. Like, all the mucous membranes were dry and everyone thought that was all just fine in the sense of, she's just a hormonal teenager. Go on birth control. You'll be fine. She'll figure this out. Everything's fine. And guess what? It worked. Like, I was fine.
Right.
It masked all of the symptoms and everything that was internally going on. It masked all of that.
So then 9 years later, you're diagnosed with early onset menopause.
Yeah.
How does this, I've never heard of, so basically you weren't diagnosed at 16, but theoretically you could have been. What happens in your body where menopause starts at 16? Like, what was going on?
You know, it's really unfortunate in the sense of, I wish I had a good answer for you because I have to give you the same answer they gave me. They did all the testing for autoimmune and everything that could have potentially been a cause at such an early age for menopause starting. And I fell into the, what is it, like a 0.01% category of, we have no idea why. It's unexplained why you started menopause so early. Unfortunately, my levels by the time I was actually diagnosed at 25 was, unfortunately, there was like no coming back from that. My FSH was 130 and my AMH was 0.08. And so there was really no like even chance of trying on my own. So,
and I know, as many of us do when we're on the other side, like, you wouldn't change your story for anything because your girls are your girls. But if you could have done something different, what could you have done? Could you have frozen eggs at that point? Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the part that I think is the hardest and was the hardest when I was 25, because at that point I didn't have my girls yet. So at 25, I was angry. I was upset. I said, why did no one check this? Because I lost the chance of getting to harvest and freeze my eggs. And had someone caught it or even thought, you know, this seems strange that a 16-year-old is having all of these symptoms, not just like one of them, but consistently having all of these symptoms and not to do any type of extra work, like no labs were drawn, no ultrasounds, nothing. It was just, here's birth control, take it and be done. And it really did limit and completely exclude the opportunity I had to have genetically related children.
Okay. So how old were you? I think you met your husband pretty young too, right? How old were you?
Yeah. Well, my current husband, yes. I met him when I was 27.
Okay.
I think so, 27.
But you knew going in, like, you had to be like, look, I want kids, but here's what's going on. Like, how did that happen for you? What was that like?
And I'll be super honest. You know, infertility not only affects you personally, but it affects the relationships that you're in as well as family around you. And so when I was diagnosed, I was married, not to my husband, Samira, but I was married. And you know, that diagnosis and what kind of unveiled from that diagnosis and what we went through a private adoption that failed, it broke us and it was devastating. And our marriage did not survive that. And so during that time from 25 to 27, it was a really dark time for me because I was 25. I was divorced. I couldn't have kids because at that time I wasn't aware of the donor egg option. And so when I met Samir, my husband, you know, I wasn't sure how to tell him all of that. Like, how, as a 27-year-old woman, how do you say, you know, I'm divorced, I don't believe I can have kids. Like, what would you want with me? Because all the things you think about in a relationship, it's like, I can't provide you with those things. Mm-hmm. And so that was something that I really struggled with. But what was so interesting was that Samir actually was aware of all of that. And I didn't know. Someone at the hospital we both worked at had actually told him, Emily is divorced and she can't have kids. She's probably not someone you would be interested in. And, you know, it's interesting because he loved me in spite of all of that. And that is something that he has taught me, that someone will love you for who you are as a person and not what your body can give them or what your body can do for them. And that just has resonated with me so much, because even in the things that I felt were deal breakers, he loved me even still through all of those.
I'm just like, my heart is so touched deeply by that, because I think about, it's one thing to be in it with someone and then say, I love you no matter what, but to know going in that all of this exists is really very rare and different and special. And like, I think about with my husband, Isaac, we said for so long, like, yeah, we totally want kids, but if it doesn't work out, we'll be fine. Of course, until we really wanted them and that way we were not fine. Yeah. You know, we just were like trying to play it cool. And we would get really into the talks about it. Like, yeah, we could have a really nice life together. But I think choosing that, like you and Samir did, and that we're really jumping hands into the unknown, is just very unheard of and amazing. I love it.
I mean, yes, it's crazy. And it also, he's also the one that opened my eyes to egg donation, because I didn't know. And he's a physician. And so when we were dating a little on, after we were more comfortable, he was like, can I look at your medical records? And I thought, gosh, I don't know if I want to do that, but sure. And so he looked through them and he said, Emily, I know your ovaries aren't working, but your uterus is completely fine. Like, you can support a healthy baby. You just have to be open to donor eggs. And I thought, what are donor eggs? Mm. Like, I'd never even heard of it. Like, no one, even the RE that diagnosed me with early menopause, hadn't even mentioned it. And so then I started researching and I was like, oh my gosh, I can possibly carry our child with donor eggs. And so that was even more amazing, because my world was like rocked, because I thought, oh my gosh, here I can actually experience pregnancy potentially.
It's such a different perspective too than most donor egg cases. So you got so really different. Excited at the possibility. Yes. Whereas for many, many people, they have to sort of mourn what they thought might be. And so I'm really interested when you talk with other donor egg recipients or intended donor egg recipients, does that play in? Like, is your excitement about it contagious? Of course it is. Like, I see it. But I mean, for somebody else who might want donor eggs, right? It's like, just like when I talk to other parent, you know, other fertility patients who are still going through it, who aren't necessarily my clients, I would never be the person that's like, rah, rah, I'm on the other side. It all works out, right? So I'm curious, like, how you navigate it, because for you, like any egg donor guests we've had talk a lot about what it was like to make the transition. And of course, once they get to the other side, they're great. Some are still going through it. But for you, you like went in almost with excitement. Like, this was hope for you, as opposed to mourning the loss of what you thought would be, you know?
Yeah, so much so. So I think I do navigate it very carefully, because I am very well aware that most of the time when you're using donor eggs, you have had to try with your own eggs and be unsuccessful. And that in and of itself journey is extremely challenging. And so when I talk with other people, most of them are not in the same journey as I am, where it was hope for me. It was an answer to a prayer that I had been hoping for. And so it is a much different journey, but yet I have shared with them that even in that, I had to still grieve the loss of genetics. It's just, I did it in a different stage. I did it where I was basically told, you're never going to have kids. So because I didn't know any other option, for 2 years, I lived in the dark, and it was a dark, dark place. I was divorced, so I felt like no one could love me. I felt like I wasn't going to be able to do what us as women, our bodies were created to do. I couldn't do that. And so I grieved the loss of that genetics in just such a different way, but I feel like it can still relate to so many who have gone through their journey of using their own eggs and it not being successful, because we still grieve the same thing. We just kind of grieved it in different capacities. And so for me, it wasn't like the end all be all plan or like a backup plan, because for me, it was a gift. And so I try to share that with them, that even though they have gone through the journey using their own eggs and it being unsuccessful, that if they're able to just shift their perspective just a little bit to see that perhaps for whatever reason, their journey meant to take them this way, that it truly could be one of the greatest gifts of their life. It just looks a little bit different than maybe what they had anticipated.
Mm. And let's talk specifically about your donor egg journey. How did you, well, wait, let me rewind one thing. You guys worked in a hospital together. He was a physician. What were you in the, what were you doing in the hospital?
I'm a nurse, but at the time when I met him, I was actually managing the emergency department.
Woo. Okay. I just love, it's like the way he says it, like, it's like such a, like, let's take this relationship to the next level. Can I see your charts? Like, it's so medically hilarious.
So yes, funny. We actually met in the cafeteria line, and that is even more corny than anything else.
I love it. I love it. Okay. So you were working in a hospital. So you were nurse trained, which is an ER, like emergency.
Yes.
I feel like ER, anybody that's ever worked in an ER can do anything, literally anything.
I mean, I wouldn't say we're like, can do anything, but we do have some superpowers that are pretty impressive.
1000%. Okay. So he presents this option to you, donor eggs. How did you start figuring out how you were going to make this happen?
So once I learned of that, I remembered from when I was diagnosed previously, and I used to live in a different part of Iowa and I worked in Wisconsin. There was a gal that I worked with at the hospital, and she had tried and tried and tried and could not get pregnant on her own. And I remember her talking about this magical doctor. And I still smile when I think about it, because she was like, this guy is magic. And we went to him, and we had been trying for, multiple years. And they went to see him, and he was in Chicago, and lo and behold, they got pregnant. And then they went back and they got pregnant with twins, and then they got pregnant again. And I was like, this guy must be magic. So when Samir mentioned it, the first thing I did was message that nurse. And I said, can you please tell me that clinic that you saw with the magic doctor? Can I please have his name? Mm-hmm. And that's how we found the clinic, and we set up a virtual appointment to talk to them about my medical history and then the option of donor eggs.
Okay. And did this clinic work specifically with a particular egg bank?
So no, they actually had their own donors in-house, which is something I loved, because not knowing anything really about the egg donor world at that time, had they used an outside bank, I think it would have caused me even more stress, because it's a lot to navigate selecting a donor at a bank and then kind of getting it to your clinic. Now, granted, I think they've streamlined the process very well, but having an in-house bank to choose from donors was phenomenal. It was so seamless. We loved it.
Amazing. How long did it take you guys to decide?
You know, we got married in September of 2016, and then we had our first consult in, I think it was October or November, that we just like talked with the doctor. And then once they approved us for like, yep, she's the candidate for egg donation, they sent us the list to look over, and we had everything done by December and had our first transfer in January.
Oh my gosh, you waste. And it worked.
We were very blessed. Our first transfer did work, and that is Penelope, our oldest.
Such a good name. Okay. So I know a lot about sperm donation. I don't know very much about egg donation. When you purchase eggs, mm-hmm. do you purchase a lot of eggs, like a certain number? And is that number finite, or can a donor offer to multiple families?
So the way I can speak to just how our clinic works, because that's what I know most about it. With our clinic, we decided to go the frozen route because we didn't live in the same state or city. So trying to get me there with a fresh cycle and like scheduling that donor was too much for our schedule and Samir's schedule as a physician. So we decided to go the frozen route. And so what we did was, once we looked at the donors that had frozen lots already available, they were like ready, waiting to be selected. Once we selected the donor that we wanted, then you just buy one lot, or you could buy two, I think, or maybe three. I guess you could probably buy as many lots as you wanted. We just started with one, and our first lot came with eight eggs.
Oh, wow.
And that's what we started with to do our transfer.
So did you have to decide ahead of time that, let's say you got those eight, you would be okay with a different family having a different eight from the same donor?
So, you know, I mean, yes, because she had other lots available. And so other families mm-hmm. could take those. And honestly, I'll tell you, I'm probably one of the, I don't know, if, I don't want to say one of the few, because I haven't met a lot of other people that also feel this way. But I never focused on anybody outside of what we were doing. So I didn't think about, okay, those other 8 eggs or 6 eggs in that lot are not coming to our family. They're going to go somewhere. I didn't put energy into that. I didn't worry about it. I didn't think about it. I'm not saying that was the best choice, but that's how I went about it. So I honestly didn't think about where their eggs were going and if they were going to turn into a baby that lives somewhere that is half, you know, related to my child. That wasn't something during the process that I focused on. It would have been too much to handle.
It's so interesting because I really think the circumstances on why you needed donor eggs really affects that. Because I think for people where it's a last resort or it feels like a last resort, all they can think about are all the negative things. Whereas for you, when it was such a source of hope, it was easier not to worry about any of that stuff. It was just the way to get to your family, you know?
Yeah. I mean, for me, that's how I did look at it, right? Because families are built in so many ways now. And knowing that the donor that we selected offered lots to lots of different families, only just thought to myself, like, I cared more. Is she a proven donor? Has one of her lots of eggs provided a live child? If the answer was yes, sign me up. Like, and even Amazing. Though that child is genetically connected to my child, that never impacted me in any way, shape, or form, especially since we knew that we were going to be super open and transparent with our children. Then it was even more of just when we get to that point, when they're old enough to understand that side of things, we would just share that information.
So let's talk about how you do talk about it with your children, because I know you're very open with them already. Remind me, they're 6 and 4, you said, yeah, right? Yep. Yeah. So when and how does it come up and how do you approach it?
Yeah. So we started right away because I was scared. So as much as I feel super confident in our choices and our journey, it doesn't make me, or at the time, it didn't make me super confident in how to tell this story to my child. And so I ended up getting books that talked about donor conception, specifically egg donation. And when I was nursing or feeding the baby, I would just read the book. And she had no idea what I was saying. She was a baby. But what it did for me is it allowed me to get comfortable and it allowed me to understand how to say the words in a story format that made sense and wasn't hard or scary. And so I just kept reading the books. I read the books all the time since she was a baby. And then as she got older, she started asking questions about the book. So then we started talking about, well, what does this mean or what does that mean? And then I would say, well, this is mommy, like this person in the book, it's just like your mommy. And this person's like your daddy. And this is like you. And she started to understand like, oh, this is my story. And so we would share that our donors, we call them helpers in our family right now at this age. So we say, you know, mommy's eggs weren't working and we needed a helper. And this helper gave us an amazing gift of some eggs. And so the books helped a ton. And I know that a lot of people are scared of, how do I say it? What should I say? Like I'm nervous, and reading books literally takes that all out for you. And you just read the story.
I love that so much. And I love the way I'm just picturing you reading it to a baby. Like it's such good practice for you to just get the story out. Yeah. That's genius.
By the time they're ready, like when they start to understand, you know, closer to 2, you've been reading the story for 2 years.
So like, it's like at every point they can grasp a little bit more and a little bit more.
Yeah. And then your comfort level is beyond because you've been doing this for 2 years. And it literally, in my opinion, was the easiest way to get me prepared to talk with them.
Amazing. Okay. So back to Hopeful Mama really quick. I know we're jumping around a little, but it's also interconnected. Yeah. So it's a 501c3. So you're raising money in order to be able to do these programs.
Yeah.
Did you have any sort of fundraising background?
Oh, no. Nope.
I love it. Absolutely. You're like me. Build the plane in the air. Figure it out as you go.
Absolutely none. I did have a very short stint where I learned a little bit about sales and marketing for about, I don't know, maybe 3 months. And it at that time, it was interesting. I didn't know why that time in that that area was so short. But then as Hopeful Mama started to come to fruition, I was like, oh my gosh, I went through that season because I needed it for now. And so in that season, I learned that I was very comfortable talking to people about infertility. And I was comfortable talking to them about the need with infertility related to finances. And I was comfortable asking for money. Like it didn't make me feel uncomfortable because I felt so strongly about how supporting these women would impact their lives and also impact the donor's life. The donors as in the financial donors. I just want to make sure I'm clear on that.
Yeah. Thank you. So, very important distinction.
Yes. And so that was literally the only background I had besides managing an emergency department, which I don't know if that gives me a lot of fundraising background, but it did give me a lot of like pull up my bootstraps and figure it out type of.
Yes.
behaviors. So,
right. Like get your hands dirty, yeah. Just do what needs
to get
done.
We'll figure it out kind of attitude. As you go. Yeah.
I love that. So where do you hope Hopeful Mama goes? What would you like to see? What's your long-term vision?
You know, it's already coming to fruition in some very small ways, which is insane. Cause like I said, we aren't even a year old yet, but I hope that our fertility grants can get larger every single year. And so within our first year, I wasn't sure if we would be able to fundraise enough to offer grants, but we just shared out through our email newsletter that we are opening grants April 1st. And so even in our first year, we're going to be able to offer out $7,500, which again is not a large amount, but for our first year, it's huge.
And every dollar helps, literally every dollar.
It does. And so that is a huge accomplishment for us. And I just hope to see that grow year over year. I want to expand Hopeful Mama across the nation. Our support groups already see people from East Coast, West Coast, the North, the South, different countries. We've had people from Canada, Guatemala, India, all over that have joined our support groups. But I'm hoping to get extensions of Hopeful Mama for in-person options. And so we're currently looking in Des Moines, Iowa, which is about 2 hours from where we are. And then we have a connection that's out in the DC area that we're looking at potentially getting to expand to an in-person option out there. So really Hopeful Mama over the next 5 years, we're hoping to just see grow where we could put expansion out across the country where we will have in-person opportunities as well for support.
Amazing.
Yeah.
In terms of your health, how have you had to make adjustments because you're, you know, young, menopausal, and have been for a really long time? How does it impact your day-to-day life now?
The menopause side of things?
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, it's hard because since I've been in menopause for so long, I feel like sometimes I get so used to some of the things that I forget, like, oh, that's probably related to the fact that I'm in menopause. I do take a hormone replacement therapy. It is not a traditional one. Traditional ones I had tried where it's just like estrogen or estradiol and progesterone, and they're kind of separate and you take different doses. It didn't work for me. It actually made a lot of my symptoms worse, and that was not ideal. So we actually went back to a medication that is consistently considered a birth control, which is so ironic, but it works. It has 1.5 of estrogen and then 30 of progesterone. And so that group together is what works best for my symptoms. So I would say that medication works about 80% for symptom relief. I still have breakthrough hot flashes. I still have breakthrough night sweats where I wake up and it literally is like I had taken a shower. So I have to change the bed sheets, change my clothes, because it's not just like I sweated. It's literally drenched in water and the bed is covered. I still get pretty bad headaches. So working on trying to work through what I can do to assist with that. You know, dryness, it is something a lot of people struggle with, but early menopause women struggle even more so with it, which definitely impacts any type of, you know, intimacy that you have with your partner because it's not comfortable and it's hard to manage. And so there's lots of different options for that. You know, you can do estrogen patches. Some people do estrogen suppositories. Those never worked well for me. And so I kind of, after trying those, I kind of stayed away from those. But again, there are a lot of options out there for people. So yeah. I think finding a good lubricant is one of the best things you can do for your intimate relationship to make sure that you're not at least experiencing painful intercourse.
Absolutely. Amazing. Well, you're just such a wealth of information. As we wrap up, I always like to ask if there's any phrase or cliche or piece of advice that anyone ever gave you that you like to repeat, share, talk about all the time.
I'm trying to think of something.
Yeah, there's no pressure too. If you're like, nope, I don't have one. That's okay too.
No, I have two. So I'll share both of them. One is from like a employment standpoint that I used to share with my team all the time. And I said that you need to be direct, but you can always be kind. And so I think that's something that can maybe go outside of the workplace too, because sometimes like even in the infertility realm, like we need to be direct. We need to be very clear about like what is going on or what our needs are or what we want, but you can still do that while being kind. And that's important that I think people forget sometimes that you can actually be both at the same time. You can be kind, but direct. And then from Hopeful Mama standpoint, it's a tagline that we have on a lot of our marketing and our notebook pads of paper that we give out at support groups. But it says on the bottom that we were never meant to walk this road alone, because I remember on my journey, I felt so isolated and so alone for a while. And with Hopeful Mama, I wanted to bring a sense of community that another woman never had to feel like she was alone. And so that's something that I like to share a lot, that, you know, you don't have to do it alone. We're here to help and support you.
I love that so much. We're going to link out to where everybody can find you. And thank you for being here.
Yes, thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Amazing. I want to remind everybody there's still time to sign up to Help Me on Advocacy Day. If you'd like to advocate for family building rights, IVF protection, DM me or go to resolve.org and see where you can sign up. I'd love to have you on my team. Thank you so much to Emily. I love the perspective that she offers. If you want to donate to Hopeful Mama Foundation or use any of their resources, of course, everything is linked out for you. In the meantime, please like, rate, and follow Abby Feeder on Instagram, InCircle Fertility, or The Fertility Check. And I can't wait to see you next week.